Okay, first of all, how long has the school been in operation?
The school has been in operation 16 years. Mm-hmm. We completed our 16th year in February.
Did you start the school or did someone else start
it? I founded the school and started it myself.
Mm-hmm. And you've been in Nashville?
Well, I live in Lawrenceburg, 75 miles south of Nashville. But the school was originated in Nashville. We were the first school east of the Mississippi River, south of Mason-Dixon line. And it was that reason that I started it. I taught in one in the Midwest for about 12 years, and since there was not one in this region of the United States, I decided to start one. Mm-hmm. I've never regretted it.
Had you been auctioneering for a long time before that?
Oh, yes. I've been in the auction business for better than 33 years.
Goodness, that's a long time. How did you get into it?
I had a great uncle that was a country auctioneer. And I used to follow him around. He never did attend an auction school. He was just an old timey auctioneer that was slow and didn't have a chant. But he just, people had hired him to hold sales, and he finally just got into the business, and I followed him around. And it's been more than 40 years since I helped on my first sale.
What was your first sale like?
First sale, well, it was out in the country. But in those days, about the only thing auctioneers sold were personal property sales, where there was a death in the family. Or people would sell out and go north or go to Florida, and they would dispose of their household goods and farming tools. And then there was the old-fashioned box supper and pie suppers that were held at the country school. That was about all that was going back in those days.
Mm-hmm. So that was your first sale, was it?
Well, it was a country auction of household goods and farming tools.
Had you practiced before that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'd practiced.
Did you learn most of your style from your uncle or from other auctioneers?
Well, I would listen to him, and of course, he had a way of selling and drawing a crowd. And then I went to the livestock markets and listened to them, and I was about a happy medium in between them.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't really start out going to an auction school. Did you ever go to an auction school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I went to auction school in 1950.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where was that?
Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Oh. One thing I want to ask, you mentioned old-time auctioneers or country auctioneers. What was sort of distinguished? Was anything distinguished the old-time auctioneer? Somebody you call an old-time auctioneer?
Yes, as an example. The old-timey auctioneers had no rhythm. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a sales pitch, no speed. They would stand up and just say, well, what am I bid for? Mm-hmm. What did you give? And they would stand back and wait. And if you didn't get a bid, they were just at the mercy of the world.
Oh.
They didn't have any filler words, any rhythm, and then the training came along for auctioneers, train them professionally. They begin to give them filler words. That is something to have something to say, mm-hmm, while you were trying to get a bid. For instance, you might have an old-timey auctioneer standing down here a block in this direction, we'll say, and a professionally trained auctioneer standing at this end of the block and a group of people standing in between.
Mm-hmm.
And the old auctioneer, he says, he'll stand up and he'll say, well, I'm going to sell this article. What am I bid for? Somebody start me. Who'll give me a dollar? Can I hear a dollar? In that way. All right, the crowd that's standing between say, boy, that old fella is really having a hard time.
Okay.
And then they turn around to the professionally trained auctioneer that's standing at the other end of the block. And he's standing up there and say, who give me a dollar bill for it? A dollar bill, a dollar bill. Well, neither one of them have a dollar. But the people say, now this fella is really going to town up here because he's using speed, filler words, rhythm. But yet he doesn't have a dollar bid either, and that's the difference between them. This man down here is slow, mm-hmm, talking it off, and the professional auctioneer will sell five items to his one and get more for him.
Mm-hmm. So there are not too many old-time auctioneers, I guess, around?
Not anymore. In 1967, the auctioneer's licensing law came into effect in the state of Tennessee, and by the way, this is spreading nationwide, where they had to be licensed auctioneers 1 year prior to coming in under the auctioneer's licensing law and had to be the principal auctioneer in at least five sales. I'd say 90% of the old-timey auctioneers never did have a license. And when the new laws were passed, they were left out in the cold because they couldn't get in under what's known as a grandfather's clause because they were unlicensed. Had they had a privilege license, then they came in under the grandfather's clause. but they knew nothing about the law as it pertains to auctioneering. And, well, they just don't know anything but bid calling. Today, auctioneers have a well-trained course in pedigree reading, livestock judging, tobacco, how to distinguish antiques, Lassner laws, rules, regulations, contracts. They're pretty well educated now. I say the auctioneer today, after he completes a 2 weeks term in school, knows more than the auctioneer that had been out calling bid 10 years ago. 10 years, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference in any of the schools in how they teach auctioneering? Can you distinguish like the Nashville School of Auctioneering or the Indiana School of Auctioneering? Is there any difference in the style? Can you tell a student from
as you? Yes, you can tell them. Mm-hmm. You can tell them. In the Midwest, let's say out in the Missouri area, Illinois, and on in there, that's primarily livestock. So they cater, most of their teaching is centered around livestock. There's other areas, say here in the South, we go, there's every type of sale sold here. We not only sell livestock, we sell a lot of antiques. More real estate changes hands in this part of the country at public auction than there is all the other part of the nation together. So we have the automobile auctions, we have the livestock auctions, we have a world of antiques in this, the eastern part of the country, plus it's the real estate auctioning capital of the world. So we have to teach every phase of it here. And we're a little bit more. Now there's a school in High Point, North Carolina, but it caters more to automobiles. Because a friend of mine that teaches it, but he is an automobile auctioneer. And he started out teaching the chant, and it was mostly on automobile auctions. But most of the schools have a different method of teaching. But again, it's left up to the individual. Mm-hmm. I can say things that probably another auctioneer can't say. He can say things probably that I can't say. So after an auctioneer goes through a period of training, he has to choose the words that are comfortable with him, mm-hmm. things that's easy for him to say. Mm-hmm. You cannot mock another auctioneer.
Yeah.
You have to have your own way of selling.
Mm-hmm. So did you sort of develop your own style?
Yes.
After you?
Mm-hmm. I developed my own style, and then all down through the years, I've tried to study auctioneering.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a pretty good judge of human nature to be an auctioneer. I've tried to study it and figure out words that would be easy for the average person to say. You know, we go through school, we go through public school, high school, 12 years, and we're taught the correct English. And then on into college, and then at 2 weeks here at the school, we teach them how to butcher it. In other words, the shortcuts that you use in auctioneering, you just naturally learn to butcher the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sell day in and day out, and you're chopping the words up, then in your regular conversation, you have a tendency to chop them up.
I can imagine. Well, you said I guess understanding human nature is just one of the skills involved in auctioneering, and I think every profession requires a lot of special skills, and this might be one some people wouldn't already think of, but what are some of the other skills you think a person who's going in auctioneering
well,
have?
Well, you can usually make a, I can, as a general rule, I can make a person bid one more time after they quit.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at a person and they'll maybe just give you a faint shake of the head, no. Really, you can tell by the way they shake their head whether they're undecided or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether they're just emphatically out. If they just shake their head big and no, I'm not going to do it. But if you look back at them and they kind of look at it and then they kind of give you a halfway nod, you know that they actually down deep in their heart want to bid again. And if you'll come back, just ignore them, completely ignore them, and turn back to them and say you have an article and you're asking for $15 for it, and just turn back to them and say 15 and give them a nod of the head. At the same time you ask them for the bid, they'll meet you halfway every time. They can't keep from it. They'll just bid. because they're really undecided to start with, and they need somebody just to prod them just a little bit, mm-hmm. so the auctioneer can prod the crowd on. Mm-hmm.
What are those?
He has to study values. If he didn't know what an article was worth, he wouldn't know what to start it at, what to ask for the opening bid, and secondly, he wouldn't know when he received the top money, when to sell out. And he'd stand there, maybe starting the sale. He'd ask for a bid that was ridiculously high or ridiculously low if he didn't know values. And then when he got as far as the people would bid, he'd probably consume a lot of time trying to get more money when actually he had all the articles worth. Mm-hmm. And at least all he's going to give, and he might as well sell and go on. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the personality of the auctioneer has anything to do with it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. An auctioneer that is full of life and smiles and cut up. And I've said a lot of times you have to be half comedian to be an auctioneer, you know. But you get up there and get your crowd enthused and tell a joke or two and get them loosened up. And they'll just fall right in with you. I've seen auctioneers. I had one time. There's a very prominent auctioneer that came to one of my sales. I had never heard him sell. And he'd been in the auction business, I guess, 25 or 30 years. And I was anxious to hear him sell. He came and spent the night with me. We went out to sale the next morning, and after I'd sold for about an hour, I called on him, and he got up, and he never could get a bid on anybody. They would not bid for him. He tried two or three articles. He couldn't get the people to bid, and finally he just gave up and stepped down and quit, and I got back up and finished the sale. But you have to be friends to the people that in the area where you're selling. It's hard for an auctioneer to go into another state, just walk in cold turkey, say fly into a place or drive into a place, get there at 8 o'clock and start selling at 10. Mm-hmm. If I'm going into a strange territory for an auction sale, if it has any value to it at all and I can afford the budget affords it. I like to get in there 3 to 5 days advance of the sale. I like to call on business people, visit in communities, get acquainted with people, maybe attend a civic club luncheon mm-hmm. or something like that. I do a lot of public speaking mm-hmm. and I'll try to line up a banquet or a luncheon or something 2 or 3 days before the sale. So I can sell myself to the people. And if you can sell yourself to the people, then the sale's half sold.
Mm-hmm. So do you often deal with people personally, like call someone's name in the audience? Is that part of the
Well, it's a one-on-one sale. In other words, those people, if you're friendly with them, and I go around and I try to get to every sale I have at least an hour before the sale starts, shake hands with the people, right, joke yeah. with them, and really break them down and win them over on my side before the sale ever starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you just drove up and got out and picked up a microphone and started selling, it's bad. It's bad. Huh. It's bad for the auctioneer and it's bad for the person you're working for because mm-hmm. they're paying you. And you need to be acquainted with the people and have them on your side.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. What drew you to auctioneering? What do you think sort of draws people? I know a couple of the students were saying, well, I just like old junk, you know, but mm-hmm. I just wonder what.
Well, a combination of things, I guess. First of all, I was raised on a farm, and my parents were sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's parents were sharecroppers. And like I said, I followed this old uncle of mine around. I was drafted into service, World War II. With no formal education. And I'm going to, of course, the closer time came for me to get out of service, I'm going to, what am I going to do? You know. And I had no training of any type. And so finally I got to reflecting back upon the years that I'd followed this uncle of mine around. And there were very few auctioneers throughout the country then, only one or two mm-hmm. that I knew of anywhere in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say the last year that I was in service, I really made up my mind that I wanted to get into the auction business. But it's a business that's very hard to get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's in those days, it was much harder than it is now because people were not educated in the auction way of selling then, as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in the paper yesterday, I picked up the paper and looked at it, and there was 35 ads in the paper here yesterday.
That is incredible.
35. And I guess involved $2 to $5 million worth of property that'll be changing hands right here in the Nashville area within the next 10 days. 35 newspaper ads in the Sunday paper on auction sales. Mm-hmm. Everything from household goods to jewelry, fine antiques, to the finest of farms and homes.
That's incredible. So it's a pretty good business now.
It's a good business. It's as good a business as a young man can get into today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding that more and more older people are getting into it because they're finding that the retirement benefits, Social Security, are not enough to maintain the standard of living that they were accustomed to when they were working.
Mm-hmm.
Auctioneering can be done on a part-time basis or a full-time basis. They find that if they can, even though they don't follow the profession of auctioneering per se, that they can work as a ring man or a ground man for an auctioneer and pick up an extra $100 to $200 a week on the side, working a day a week or a couple of nights a week, and that gives them $300 or $400 a month to supplement the income. It goes a long way. It pays the grocery bill.
Mm-hmm. Does a ringman require special training too?
Not necessarily. It's best for them to. We have a course here. We have a very fine person, Robert Brown from Hodgensville, Kentucky. Robert will be here Friday, and he will be training ground men.
Mm-hmm.
He'll have them on the ground, spotting bids, turning in bids. And Bob was a football coach for about 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
He always had a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you'd find that if you could see him in action, why.
One of the things I was interested in, do you have to teach different auctioneering styles for different products? That, like for livestock, does that require a different style?
Okay.
Do you have to teach
yes.
that here? Like,
We have, for instance, this week is fundamentals, something that everybody should know. Now next week we'll have a purebred cattleman coming in, and he will teach cattle sales. We'll have our tobacco man coming in. He will teach tobacco. We'll have a man on antiques. Now you sell, there's several different types of audiences to sell to, and it depends on the type of audience that you're selling to as to the technique in selling you're going to use and the speed you're going to use. For instance, if you're selling tobacco or you're selling cattle in a market where packing houses are buying, you're selling to educated buyers. You can sell 3 or 4 times as fast as you would if you were out here on a farm selling where there was a lot of old people. Or if you were selling antiques where there's a lot of money involved and people want to study a little bit about it, you would slow down naturally and get it. I have a tape here of our tobacco instructor.
Mm-hmm.
You may be able to pick up some on this. This tape recorder isn't too good. Now every time you heard that man calling out 68 or 69, he had sold a basket of tobacco and he was starting another basket.
Wow, that's fast.
That's fast. He's selling about 600 sales an hour. About 600 an hour.
So is tobacco auctioneering probably the fastest?
Yes, it's the fastest.
Does it differ any other way from other kinds of auctioneering?
You never ask for a bid. A tobacco auctioneer never asks for a bid. He only cries the bid that he has. And if nobody, he's selling to educated buyers. They have a series of signals they give him, or they may just look at him. And he's standing on one side of the row of tobacco, and the buyers are on the other side. He calls the bid he has, and if he doesn't get a signal, he just sells.
Mm.
Period. That's it. He don't ask anybody to bid.
Mm-hmm.
He calls the bid he has.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying at lunch, that's one of the few auctioneerings where you bids where you go up and down.
Up and down. They sell the ascending method and the descending method. Mm-hmm. Now, you might could, I can play this tape, and you can tell when he's going up, when he's going down. Mm-hmm. Did you notice it?
I didn't. You know, it's so hard for me to pick it up. All right,
let me see if I can pick it out. I'll point down if he's going down. See what he does, if he gets a bid, when he gets a bona fide bid, he starts going up. Mm-hmm. If that man sets him in, say at 68, that is normally the pool price or suggested price or what the ring man or the starter thinks it's worth. Mm-hmm. If the starter says $68, if he gets a bid, he'll go up. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't get a bid, he'll start coming down. He sells to the first man that bids if he's coming down. Mm-hmm. He sells to the last man that bids if he's going up.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, if he sets him in at 68, he might get 69, 70, 71, 72, and sell it for 72 or 73. Mm-hmm. But if he says 68 and somebody bids 67, it's sold 67.
Oh, right.
Sells to the first bidder coming down, to the last bidder going up.
Mm-hmm. So you said there's an ascending and a descending method.
Right.
Is that true of other kinds of sales where you just have one kind of, like this sale will be ascending?
No.
Tobacco
is the only method that you use the ascending and descending method in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some foreign countries, the Dutch auction. Mm-hmm. Now, you do maybe advertise a Dutch auction. A Dutch auction.
The one here is a Dutch auction, is that right? In the United States, they have what they call
Dutch auctions. They could advertise a Dutch auction.
Mm-hmm.
That is where a price would be set on the merchandise. And the auctioneer could not go any lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd start coming down. They'd say ask $50 for a bid. $50, $45, would you give $40? And they would, the first man that bid would get it. But the ascending method is where you set it in, say, $50 and get 52 and a half or 55 and go up. Now, in Japan, they use a hand signal method where the auctioneer puts an article up for bids and the people that are in the crowd, they're interested in it, merely throw up their hands and by hand signal, they signal the bid. The auctioneer only looks at the crowd, see who has the highest hand signal, and sells to him. He does not ask for another bid. He just scans the crowd with his eyes, and the man that has the highest signal gets it. In China, a lot of their bidding is done in secret. The auctioneer has an item that he's going to sell, say a painting or an antique sitting on a table with a cloth spread over it. And when he asks for bids, people will come file by and give him a handshake under the table and signal him as what the bid is going to be. And that's the way they do it in China.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Are there different regional styles in the United States?
Yes.
What would be the difference in sale?
Well, let's say the New England section. It's more of a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
They're slower talking. It's a high-pressured salesmanship. Just like jewelry auctions. Very few jewelry auctions do you hear the chant of an auctioneer.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sales pitch, a talking tone.
Mm-hmm.
So in your New England section, it's more of a talking tone than it is a high-pitched auctioneering chant.
Hmm.
They use more of a talking chant, where we use a fast chant in this part of the country, and even on the west. Out in the New England section, it's a slower process. And your jewelry auctions nationwide are slow. a lot of times they're dealing with people that in jewelry stores that are not accustomed to attending jewelry auctions. Mm-hmm. They have to explain in detail more of the value. You're dealing with more valuable items, and they're slower, and they don't really get in there and chat.
That's interesting. And you were saying at lunch today that you that sometimes the New England students have the hardest time learning the chant.
True.
Is that because of what they're used to, you think, or do they have
that's
trouble
what they've
with the voice?
Been accustomed to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the feeling or a theory that if they go back up there and try to sell in a faster pace, that they're not going to get along. But it's just the opposite. Mm-hmm. The ones that I've had experience in teaching, when they go back, they do much better. They take the jobs from the slower auctioneers.
Mm-hmm.
They can sell more merchandise. If a man is working on a commission, or he has a load of merchandise, the more merchandise he can sell, the more money he can make on his merchandise, the more commission the auctioneer can make. Therefore, he needs to sell as many items as he can sell.
Mm-hmm.
And the faster auctioneers can sell it and get more for it. The reason they get more for it is people don't have time to stop and to think what it's worth.
Yeah.
If something catches their eye, they want it and they'll bid on it. And they'll go above and beyond what they would bid if they had time to think.
So that's sort of, we were talking earlier about the psychology of the
right.
chant. Part of the psychology, I guess, is to do it fast.
In speed. That's right. In speed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In speed. And winning the confidence of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cutting up with them.
No,
you
so
have
humor
to be,
is part of the...
You have to be part showman, you know, a little showmanship, no values,
mm-hmm.
and have the confidence of the people, and just all of it. Now, you know, a preacher, he's part showman
mm-hmm.
in the pulpit. His style, some preachers can get up there and say the same thing and not get any response, not get any compliments or anything. Another preacher can get up there and they can say the same words
mm-hmm.
with different gestures, different styles, and get response galore.
That's right.
I mean, they can read it. You can take, pick out five people, say three people, and give them a poem and say, now I want you to read this tomorrow. You study it over tonight and you read it tomorrow. And there would be a 1,000% difference in the way each one of them would read that, the same poem.
That's right. Have you ever noticed, I know once I heard someone from the Midwest, I think it was, or maybe the Far West, saying that he knew some auctioneers who were also preachers, Baptist preachers, doing on the weekend and auctioneered.
Oh, it's yes. There's a lot of preachers in the auction business. I haven't asked if there's anybody in this class or not.
Mm-hmm.
But very seldom do we ever have a class that we don't have a minister in it.
Oh, really?
That's right.
So do you think they make good auctioneers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. We have doctors, lawyers, judges, psychiatrists, bankers, school teachers, farmers, realtors. We have people from all walks of life practically sitting in every class. I believe the last class we had 18 states and one foreign country represented in the last class. So they get along, and they're from all walks of life,
mm-hmm.
all ages, men and women, black and white.
Has there been any change at all in the students over the years since you started the school? Have you noticed there being any difference in the students?
Yes, we had a problem during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
There was kind of rebellion on the part of the younger generation. And of course some of them older people kind of rebelled against the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Be that as it may, it seemed that during that period of time, we didn't have any of the younger people taking advantage of their training under the G.I. Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Following World War II, we were educating a lot of students under the G.I. Bill,
mm-hmm.
and very successfully. They were training, taking the training very successfully. But then came the Vietnam War along, and during that time and since that time, we're not having near as many young people take advantage. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It is
like
hard work. You're under a tremendous physical strain as well as a mental strain. You have a, you'd be surprised how much weight you will lift in the course of a day. If you're holding up the items, man, this man hands you a pound, this one five, this one ten, and you're holding those items up and passing them around, you'd be surprised how many tons of weight that you would lift during the day. Then you're under a mental strain. You have to know, what am I selling? How much is it worth? Who bid the first bid on it? Where is he in the audience? Who bid against him? Where are they? You have a mental pattern that you're having to constantly work and keeping in mind, what's it worth? I'm going to have to sell it when I get the word. And you're physically exhausted and you're mentally exhausted after 3 or 4 hours.
So 3 or 4 hours, you say, is about as long as you could probably go?
No. I've gone 12 hours.
12 hours?
I have sat down time and time again and sold 10 and 12 hours without a relief, as hard as I could sell. But I'm not anymore. Age has a way of keeping up with it. Well, you have to protect your voice.
How do you do that?
Well, you protect it by not straining it. For instance, rhythm is very important to an auctioneer. If you sell in rhythm, it's easy on you. Just like you may have sat in church by someone that was singing in a monotone. It wears you out to sit by. Nobody around them can sing. Same thing is true with an auctioneer. You put an auctioneer up there, if he doesn't have rhythm, he's going to wear the crowd out. He's going to wear himself out. You have to watch the air.
Yeah.
Don't ever sit or stand when the air is blowing into your mouth. If you're outside in the open, turn your back to the wind. Never drink anything cold, because it'll only tighten up your vocal cords. A lot of times I have got up to sell and maybe haven't sold in 2 or 3 days or a week. And if I'm not in rhythm, I'll just get out and quit. I never go to a sale by myself. We carry 2 to 5 auctioneers, depending on the sale. We normally sell 30 minutes. I usually open up the sale and sell about an hour. If I'm in voice, and if everything's going good, I will sell an hour to an hour and a half. But then I won't be back up for another hour, hour and a half, because when I start, if I'm in rhythm, and everything's going like, I don't like to turn it loose. I'd rather stay with it. And I'm a cancer patient. And I find that if I sell, say, 30 minutes, and then I'm down and walking around, it wears me. I don't have the strength I used to have. And if I can get mine out of the way, where we're selling 30 minutes each, see, I sell 30 minutes, and I have a son sells 30, and a son sells another 30. That means it's an hour before I'm back on the block. I had much rather sell an hour or hour and a half the first go around while I'm in voice and in rhythm and get that out of the way. We have started using an office trailer so I can go in and go to bed.
Yeah.
I'll sail around and go in and lay down. This was not now like I was back several years ago, right after I had the surgery, but I was so weak for such a long period of time that I just have to get off of my feet. I couldn't stand on my feet. So I would sail around, and then I would go in the office trailer and lay down on the bed. And I'd lay there and rest. Instead of getting out and working the crowd, I would go in and lay down and rest.
Is there, I just was noticing when you played the tobacco auctioneer, that he had a certain pitch, and then at one point he lowered it.
He was resting his voice.
He
was resting his voice. So you pitch your voice kind of like a musical scale, kind of like you're singing. You know, every song has a different key to it. And you know, that's the reason you don't get so tired singing. Is because the songs are pitched in different keys, and you're singing in a different pitch, a different key. All right, you know they have all night singings. People sit and sing all night long.
That's right.
Now, if they're singing the same song every time, they couldn't sing all night long. If they're singing in the same key. So an auctioneer learns to pitch his voice, and he'll sell, say, about a middle C on a piano. He'll sell in that tone of voice a while. And then he will lower his voice, or he'll raise his voice. And when he raises and lowers his voice, he's rested it.
That's interesting. Do you think that affects the buyers as well? Is it
sure.
Is it important to vary the pace and the tone for interest? Or
yes, it is. People get tired of listening to the same man.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's trained himself and disciplined himself enough that he can change his pitch, it rests the crowd as well as rests him.
Really interesting. Do you have any students that stand out in your mind as just real interesting, you know, over the years that you've taught, who've had
Oh, we have talked so many. I would hate to have to single out.
Yeah. You tell me you had one student here who was real shy, and then she just turned into
a young lady that was real shy from Kentucky, and she just turned out to be an outstanding auctioneer. Mm-hmm. We had a Bert Christie here that played football for the Miami Dolphins, professional football player. He came here to sell cattle. And last time I talked to him, he had two or three tobacco circuits he's selling. We had Howard Bain that was a professional basketball player that made a very good auctioneer. I can think of so many, even South Carolina, I can think of one that was about as slow as they talked, but made one of as fast auctioneers ever heard
That's
in my life.
Jimmy Blocker. About that.
Jimmy Blocker.
So you don't have to. You can be a slow talker and be a good fast auctioneer.
You can be slow. That's right. As long as you're getting the message across, it doesn't make any difference if you're slow. His voice in, in his speech was slow, but when he pitched it into a selling tone of voice, he was just like a buzzsaw. He was so fast. But he made an outstanding livestock auctioneer because he was selling to an educated crowd and they could bid. They bid fast.
How do you, how do the students learn, become knowledgeable in their whatever their product is? Is that something you teach here, or is that something they just have to learn?
They just have to learn it through experience. Let's say, for example, that
this cord might be under your foot. I'll just get it like it's there.
Let's say, for example, that they want to specialize in antiques. I have found in every community that I go in, there's always two or three ladies that love antiques, that deal in them on the side. If I get a hold of an estate that has a lot of antiques in it, I can go to them. Mm-hmm. If I don't know the value of them, I can go to them. And it tickles them to death to be the first one in that house to get to see those antiques. They will tell me what they're worth. I code mark them. Mm. And then the day of the sale, I look at my code. And I pitch out to them about what the lady told me it was worth, and 9 times out of 10 it'll be close. And we teach them how to code mark, who to contact. You know, if you're selling automobiles, there's a black book published every week on the value of automobiles. It tells you the price of them clean, extra clean, or average, what the wholesale price is and what the retail price is. There's also a book published on farm machinery. And it tells you the price. Well, if you can read, and if you can read and look, you can tell. In other words, you look at an automobile and say, well, now, is this car clean? Is it average? Look at your book, get the make and get the make, model, and motor number of that car, and look at your black book. This is a book that the banks and the finances companies go by when they loan money on them. Mm-hmm. Why not use it when you sell them? Same thing with your farm implements. They have books published of the average loan value. And when an implement dealer goes out to look at a piece of equipment, a lot of times he'll carry a little book with him. Huh. So there's many ways you can get the information. If you're willing to work, if you're willing to study, mm-hmm. you can't go to auction school or any school and go through and get your diploma and sit back. You know, they say a practice of law, that's a trial and error thing. He's taught the basics. But if you go in and ask him a question, chances are he's going to have to look it up in his law book. He's taught how to look it up, where to look it up, how to interpret the law. But he doesn't have it all stored in his mind. He'll go in, he knows where to find it, and he'll go in, pick up that book, and read it to you.
Yeah.
See? A doctor, that's a practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. They diagnose the case. They don't have any one drug that's a cure-all for everything, so they'll try this, and if it doesn't work, they'll try another drug. If it doesn't work, they'll try another drug. That's a practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim McCord, that was one of our instructors here, he was mayor of his hometown 25 years. Then he was a member of Congress, and then he was governor of the state, 2 terms. And he said that he could be just as honorable in the profession of auctioneering as it could in the practice of law or the practice of medicine.
That's interesting.
And I thought I had it in the booklet there, but I don't. But I asked him for a comment one time, and he gave me that and sent me his picture. And he wrote that out and signed it and gave it to me, and I published it in school catalog because I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's only about 2% of the people in the United States that make over $30,000 a year. And 75% of those, or 80% of them, are in sales work.
Really?
That's right.
Oh, that's interesting.
75 or 80% of the 2% are salespeople that are making over $30,000 a year. The highest paid salesman is auctioneer.
Oh, that's interesting.
The highest paid salesman out of that block is in the field of auctioneer. It's one of the highest paid sales professions that there is.
So usually you just work by commission on whatever you...
We work by commission 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm. What's the usual commission, or does it vary with them?
It varies. Here, we normally get 6% on real estate. On personal property, 15%, mm-hmm. around that. Of course, there's exception to every rule. A lot of times you'll get into an estate where there's an enormous amount of antiques that are valuable, and they might ask you to slide your rule down. But people have a misconception of paying commissions. They'll come in your office and talk to you, or they'll call you and talk to you and say, now this is a big sale, so you ought to sell it on a cheaper rate of a commission.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't stop to think that the bigger the sale, the more responsibility that the auctioneer has.
Right.
I had a man in the office talking to me one time. He came in and he was trying to cut me down on my commission. And it was $500,000 sale. And he told me that another auctioneer had promised, had told him he would sell it 2% cheaper than I'd offered to sell it to for. And I told him, I said, I wouldn't blame you if you went and got it. But the thing about it is, if you want a 6% job, you get it. If you want a 3% job, you get it. The more the property is worth, the more responsibility the auction firm has. And you know, about 80% of the time when we're out here holding auction sales, we're dealing with a person's life savings.
That's right, that is a big responsibility.
And we have to protect it. And I know that if a person doesn't charge for his services, he cannot afford to get out and do the pre-sales work that is needed to be done to have a successful sale. You can call an auctioneer up, and there's a lot of them that say, well, I'll come sell you a sale for $100. They will. But all they do on the day of the sale is drive up and call the bids and get out and go home, collect their $100. We work off a commission. We list it. We take pictures. We arrange it. We advertise it. We work out financing in a lot of cases. We pre-sell. We hunt our buyers up. The day of the sale, chances are we know who our buyers are. We know about how much money they're going to spend. In other words, we go to the sale with all of this knowledge. And if we passed up a sale, took it for nothing, you might say, chances are if we tied up a date on a sale that we took for nothing, or very little, we would have to skip a good sale.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody come along with a good sale that you could pick up a good commission on, but you already got your time. Time is valuable. That's the thing we have, is time and service.
Yeah.
And if you tie up a date, it's tied whether you're getting $100 for the day or $1,000 for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it's terrible if you get up and sell a sale and make $2,000 or $3,000 an hour off of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They think, I wish you'd figure his commission on that. It took him 3 hours to sell it and he got $10,000. They don't realize that you have an office staff of 8 or 10 people. All of you have been working on that sale for a month.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think of the times that you visited your attorney for advice, legal opinions that you've had to get pertaining to an estate or something, the time you spent talking to bankers, the time you spent appraising the property, the time you spent surveying it. We even take airplanes and fly over property and look at it time and time again before we ever put it on paper. You can see the natural boundaries from the air. You can see the road frontage from the air. And subdivide, if you go out in a professional manner,
mm-hmm.
you get up there in an airplane or a helicopter, sit there and look at it, take a picture of it from the air. and go back and scale it out on paper and see what it's going to look like. And then go back up and fly over it and look at your mountain, look at your land again, you know.
Yeah.
And all of this takes time.
That would take
time. It takes time. And so you have to get into it. I mean, you have to study it. You have to spend a lot of time. I've sat up all night long, a lot of nights at home. Mm-hmm. I have got tied up on the sail, working on it, and I would leave the office and go home and sit down in a dining room or in a bedroom somewhere and spread my maps out where I'd be undisturbed and study it and work on it and write ads and plan it out and sometimes work all night long.
So you work not only on getting the background information, do you work on just planning exactly how you can carry out the business?
Right.
So it's a well-planned.
That's right. Now, this Saturday, we're holding a sale of a dentist that's retired, and unfortunately, he's in a rest home in his wife both. I have already spent 4 days in that house. 4 days myself. And when I was in there, I had 1 to 5 people with me working, mm-hmm. Getting the merchandise out, getting it boxed up, getting it. We have that stuff already sitting in the house in boxes ready to come out. We will have a tent that's got to go up this week for that sale. We have bleachers that have to be put up under that tent. Tables that have to be set up. We have had to build tables and set them up to hold merchandise. Mm-hmm. I built those before I came up here. So a lot of planning goes in. We will do at least, I have already put in, I'll say 60 man hours in the house myself. Counted all the other help that you've been in, probably 250, 300 man hours already been put in, and the sale doesn't come off until this Saturday. All right, this Saturday we'll go down there. We have clerks, 2 cashiers, people to bring the merchandise out of the house, people to hold it up, bid spotters or ground men, and auctioneers working. So we'll have around 12 to 15 people on the ground Saturday, besides the auctioneers.
That's incredible. And that's the sort of, this auction you're telling me about, this is the sort of auction that'll draw a big crowd.
Oh, you better believe it. It's one of those that'll run all day long.
Why do you think that is? What kind of?
A lot of old relics, collectible items, cedar buckets, cedar churns, coffee mills, powder horns, brass chandeliers, all kinds of old relics and collector's items and antique furniture and clocks and old pressed glass, crystal, silver, gold, you name it.
Is that kind of auction fun to do, or is it just a lot of work?
They're a lot of work, but I tell you, they're fun. I'd rather hold it as any type of sale ever had.
Really? Why is that?
I love the people. Mm-hmm. I love the reaction of the people. Out here, a lot of times, at sales you go to, you won't have 10 or 15 people.
Oh, yeah.
But you go to a sale like this and you'll probably have 500 registered buyers.
Wow.
Plus, you may have that many people just coming to see and be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a lot of food.
Oh, they have food too?
Yes.
Do y'all organize that?
Yes, we have to organize the food because you have to hold the crowd.
Mm-hmm.